Welcome back. This is Mark Steiner. It is the birthday of Dr. Hook, When You're in Love with a Beautiful Woman. Very upbeat song. Good idea, too. So beauty can mean many things, inside and out. So we're about to switch gears here on the Mark Steiner Show from our last segment and talk about something that affects a lot of people in this country and around the world, which is the American Studies Association's vote at their last meeting to boycott the academic institutions in Israel. And we are joined here to talk about that. Stephen Salaita is Associate Professor of English at Virginia Tech, author of six books, and writes frequently about Arab Americans. His most recent book is Israel's Dead Soul. He writes for Salon Magazine. Peter Beinart is with us. He is editor of the Daily Beast blog, Open Zion, Associate Professor of Journalism and Political Science at the City University of New York, Senior Political Writer for the Daily Beast Newsweek, and the Schwartz Senior Fellow at the New America Foundation, and author of three books, most recently, The Crisis of Zionism. And Stephen and Peter, welcome. Good to have you both with us.
Thank you for having me. Thanks.
So let me begin with, Stephen, did I pronounce your last name correctly?
Yeah, close enough. Yes, sir.
Salaita, I just want to make sure I don't like butchering people's names. But let's begin this. Very quickly start with you, Stephen, and to set this up in terms of what this ASA boycott of academic institutions means and why you support it.
Sure. It's a response from a call from Palestinian civil society to boycott Israeli academic institutions because those institutions are complicit in a variety of forms of oppression inside the occupied territories, the West Bank and Gaza, and also within Israel itself. The resolution is important, I think, first of all, because it's opening up a lot of discussion about these forms of oppression, and second of all, it tries to open up spaces for academic freedom for Palestinians and those who discuss and comment about life of Palestinians here in the United States. What it means, basically, is that the ASA, the American Studies Association, will not have institutional ties with individuals or institutions that are directly affiliated with the Israeli state.
And Peter Beinart, your book, The Crisis of Zionism, was a fascinating book, and your own critique of where that has come and that country has come. So what are the issues you have with the notion of a boycott of academic institutions, and specifically to respond to part of what Stephen was saying about your view on whether or not and how Israeli universities take part in the oppression of Palestinians in the West Bank, Gaza?
I respect the fact that BDS is a nonviolent movement. And I agree that there are deep injustices that are taking place as a result of Israeli policy, especially in the West Bank. The reason I disagree with the call for an academic boycott has to do with my basic disagreement with the thrust of the BDS movement in general in terms of its ultimate goal. To me, it seems to me a tactic has to measure up to the goal. The reason the tactic of sanctioning all of South Africa under apartheid made sense was that the goal was the overthrow of the entire apartheid regime. The BDS movement sees Israel that way. It makes no distinction between Israel proper, where Palestinians, although discriminated against, certainly, have citizenship and the right to vote. Israel's deputy speaker of the Knesset is a Palestinian-Israeli citizen, as Palestinian-Israeli on the Supreme Court. The BDS movement makes no recognition of the distinction between the Israel and the West Bank, where Palestinians lack citizenship and the right to vote, and Israel proper. And it speaks of Palestinian self-determination rightly, but it makes no reference whatsoever to Jewish self-determination. And therefore, it seems to me, it is not a movement aimed at what I think is the only workable and just solution to this conflict, which is a democratic Jewish state alongside a democratic Palestinian state.
So Stephen, I think this is a very emotional issue for a lot of people. Let me wrestle with what Peter just raised, which is looking at what's going on with Israel and the Palestinians, whether Palestinians who live inside the state of Israel or the occupied territories of West Bank and Gaza of Palestine, and equating that with South African apartheid. I think that's part of the both ideological, intellectual, and emotional underpinning of this conversation.
Right. I think that the you know the comparisons that people make and I try to avoid them largely to apartheid South Africa are difficult and complex, but there are absolutely important parallels there. So let me say that the BDS movement does not make any political demands of its advocates. It doesn't make any political recommendations about a final solution to the conflict or a final outcome. And I find the notion of Jewish self-determination to be ludicrous, quite frankly, because why should the BDS make any sort of statements about Jewish self-determination when there already is Jewish self-determination? The point is that Jews in the Holy Land are subject to a set of laws and a set of privileges from which another population, the Palestinians, is excluded. So it would be like referencing white self-determination in the United States. There's no need to reference white self-determination because whites already have self-determination. But I'd also like to comment very briefly on the situation of Palestinians, Palestinian citizens of Israel that Peter mentions. It's not as rosy a picture as he makes it out to be. He notes sort of in passing that they do face discrimination, but it's institutional, the discrimination they face. It's juridical, it's legal, it's fundamental. And the same government that governs Israel is the same government that runs occupied territories, right? That administers the West Bank. So I don't think the distinction there is I don't think making a distinction between the two is a very useful thing. You know, over 2/3 of Israeli teens consider Arabs less intelligent, uncultured, and violent. Half of Jewish Israelis say they wouldn't live in the same building as an Arab. 75% don't approve of Arabs and Jews sharing apartment buildings. Half of Jewish Israelis, wouldn't allow their children to befriend an Arab. All recent polls suggest 56% of Israeli Jews don't believe Arabs should be allowed in the Knesset. 13% of Israel's state land, which is administered by the Jewish National Fund, is off limits to Arabs. They're not allowed to buy or lease it. So what we're talking about is deep, profound institutional discrimination against Palestinian citizens of Israel, in addition to the types of oppression that Palestinians in the territories deal with. And it's all administered, again, I make the point, by the same government, with the backing and institutional participation of Israeli universities.
So, and Peter, I mean, this is, what I want to ask you is where you think this is going. I mean, this clearly is a movement that is being pushed by a lot of academics in this country, in the United States, that I think that there's a lot of people on, for want of a better term, the Jewish left, Jews who have a lot of critique of what is happening in Israel now with the occupation, are very torn around this issue. The question of racism inside of Israel is very real. So I wonder where you think this all takes us and what our response should be, what people's response should be.
I think our response has to be based on what we believe is the optimal outcome. Stephen said that the BDS movement takes no position on a final agreement, but it sets out a set of principles which essentially make the idea that has been laid out by Bill Clinton in the Clinton Parameters, also by in the Arab Peace Initiative, the idea that's supported by Mahmoud Abbas, that's supported by Marwan Barghouti, which is the idea of a two-state solution with a democratic Jewish and Palestinian state alongside each other. It makes that idea impossible, and I don't think that. I don't think it's ludicrous at all to expect that the BDS movement, which talks about the inalienable right to Palestinian self-determination, should also say something about Jewish self-determination, because this is, after all, a conflict between two peoples in one set of land. It's certainly true. Stephen is absolutely right that we have a situation now in which the state of Israel is oppressing Palestinians in the West Bank, and I would agree with him that there is institutional discrimination against Palestinian citizens of Israel, and I think that there is a tremendous amount of anger about that from Palestinians and others around the world, and I understand the basis of that anger because there is a deep injustice, and I fear that if those of us who support the two-state solution are not able to get the Israeli government to support the genuinely support the two-state solution, that ultimately the world will turn to a BDS movement whose ultimate vision is no Jewish state within any borders. But I think that would be tragic not only for the Jewish people. I think ultimately, and here I'm paraphrasing Marwan Barghouti, probably the most popular of all Palestinian leaders, that ultimately the two-state solution is the best path for both peoples.
And we've been using the word BDS, and what I didn't say at the top of the hour, BDS stands for boycott, divestment, and sanctions. It's what the BDS movement, that's what BDS means in this. And I think that, again, what then would be for you, Stephen Salata, the ultimate goal of the boycott movement, of the academic boycott movement in Israel, which is different than disinvestment. I mean, which is taking place on American campuses as well, to say you should disinvest in anything to do with Israel, with anything to do with the Israeli economy. And even though the academic boycott doesn't say that, I mean, they really are intertwined.
Yeah, they are intertwined, and I think they're part of the same larger process, which is that of as Peter rightly called it, a form of nonviolent activism and nonviolent protest. And it's a way of pressuring Israel from the grassroots in ways that formal processes such as, you know, peace negotiations have been unable to do, right? Israel hasn't been subject to the types of pressures to which it's been forced to respond, especially at the level of state. And so what BDS, both academic boycott and divestment and a shunning of Israeli products, these sorts of things, what they're forcing Israel to do is sort of take note and understand that there's a cost and a consequence, right, for its behavior, that there is a possibility of response that might in some way help in the process of reining Israel in. I don't take a firm position on the one state or two state. I'm interested in Palestinian decolonization, and I'm interested in democracy. And I think these are what the advocates of BDS are interested in general. We don't have a set upon a principle for what the ultimate outcome is going to look like, nor do we have a sort of uniform agreement among ourselves. There are wide ranging and discussions about what a settlement will look like. But I would actually point out that what Peter articulates as his vision, right, which is to sort of create two states and get Israel out of the occupied territories, is not actually incompatible with support for BDS. Again, like I said, it's the same government, right, inside Israel, right, that discriminates against Palestinians, that also administers the occupied territories. And so what exactly is going to get Israel to remove its occupation? The peace process has been a joke, you know, ever since Oslo, a little bit more than 20 years ago. Israel's not listening to other forms of international pressure at the state level, so we're taking the pressure to the grassroots, and we're saying that, you know, this is something that Israel is bound to listen to. This is something that is going to affect Israel in ways that ensure that there's a cost to its occupation and to its violations of international law. And so the BDS program doesn't in any way preclude the idea that a two-state settlement could come out of it, or that a one-state settlement could come out of it. What it's doing is playing a central role in the process of Palestinian decolonization and the democratization of Israel, by which I mean Arabs, right, non-Jews, people, no matter what their religion, all have equal rights under the law. It's a very simple process with a very simple outcome. Equal rights under the law, which doesn't exist in the territories or inside Israel right now.
So, Peter, is part – I've read all the things you've written in your book and the articles you've written, as I've read most of Stephen's as well. And it just seems to me that part of the dilemma on the part of a lot of – Israelis and people and Americans who are either Jewish or have always supported Israel, but don't like what's going on now, is that there's a frustration not being able to figure out how to influence Israel to get out of the West Bank and Gaza, and to really have a nation where everybody can have land and everybody is completely equal inside of what's called a Jewish state. and I is and that that the opposition to BDS is in part a frustration because people can't figure out how to oppose it otherwise.
Well, that's yes, but there are other ways to oppose it. For instance, the Palestinian leadership in the West Bank, led by Mahmoud Abbas, supports a boycott of settlement goods, which I support as well, an idea which actually has some support amongst relatively mainstream Israeli intellectuals like David Grossman, the novelist, for instance, but not boycotting all Israeli products, because Abbas is basing his tactic on the ultimate goal which he wants, which is the idea of a two-state solution. I think that there can be a nonviolent protest both on the ground and externally in terms of settlement goods, even in terms of in terms of American pressure on Israel vis-a-vis its settlement policy, even in terms of things like going back to the United Nations, which are as Mahmoud Abbas did to his credit, which were framed in the language of two states. And I don't think it's quite correct to say the BDS movement takes no position on this. It lays out three principles about the final outcome, which I think are which to me are not compatible with the idea of a democratic Jewish state alongside a Palestinian state. For instance, it calls for quote ending its occupation and colonization of all Arab lands, which includes the Golan Heights. I, as someone who's concerned about Israeli security, especially given what's going on with Syria right now, don't agree that Israel should at this point be returning the Golan Heights to this madman Bashar Assad and the civil and the horrific civil war that's taken place there, which has now produced jihadi groups. I also don't think that this is why it's so important that the BDS movement makes no reference to Jewish self-determination. When it talks, I imagine the Palestinian self-determination would mean that you could have a Palestinian state with Palestinian symbols on its flag and in its national anthem and a preferential immigration policy for Palestinians. And yet, as I read it, the BDS movement's call for quote-unquote full equality in Israel would deny those things to Israel. I don't think it's illegitimate for Israel to have a preferential immigration policy for Jews, just as I would expect that a Palestinian state would have a preferential immigration policy for Palestinians. Nor do I think that a full right of refugee return, multi-generational right of refugee return, which is the third plank in the BDS movement's call, is constructive to a successful two-state solution either. And so while it's true that the BDS movement doesn't say it supports one state or two states, it sets out a set of principles that effectively makes the idea of a Jewish democratic state alongside a Jewish Palestinian, a democratic Palestinian state, sorry, impossible.
So, and I'm curious what would be another tactic. I mean, all the years of negotiations between Israelis and the Palestinian movement, armed revolt and intifadas, three decades of peace negotiations, people waiting in refugee camps and seven decades of waiting. And people were condemning Palestinians for intifadas that brought violence inside the Israeli state, and now instead there's a movement building to do the other. Well, what are the Palestinians supposed to do? Very quickly, I'm going to go back, Peter, to you, and then to Stephen. I want to get a couple phone calls in here too in the next 7 or 8 minutes we have left.
As I said, I think that the right answer, if you're going to boycott something, is to boycott settlement products, as Mahmoud Abbas is doing. I also think it's to support American pressure on Israel vis-a-vis its policies towards the settlements, as I do. Much stronger American pressure and international pressure on Israeli policy vis-a-vis settlements. You can require the identification of settlement goods, as some in Europe are talking about, to make it easier to distinguish between those products and Israeli products. The Palestinians can go back to the UN as they did if this peace process falls. But I think that those are actions in support of a two-state solution. This, it seems to me, is not.
And Stephen, a very quick thought, and I do want to get to the phones. We have a bunch of people calling, and let's get at least a couple of them.
Okay. First of all, nobody is following the lead of Mahmoud Abbas, right? You know, he is a neo-colonial leader that's been installed by Israel in the West. So nobody's following his lead, right? Nobody cares. No Palestinians care what Abbas says. The PA also changed its stance about boycotting only settlement products. It sort of walked it back, and now it has a more ambiguous but supportive stance of the BDS movement more generally. It also seems to me that Peter wants his main interest is to preserve an ethnocracy, which is incompatible with democracy. He seems obsessed with this idea of sort of maintaining a Jewish state, or what he calls a Jewish democracy. But there's no such thing as a Jewish democracy. There's no such thing as a Muslim democracy, or a white democracy, or a Christian democracy. A democracy is a state for all of its citizens, right? When we're in one group of people, one class of people, doesn't have institutional privileges over another class of people. That's simple. And also the things that he claims would undermine this two-state solution are all inscribed in international law to which Israel is party. And I want the listeners to note how Peter just sort of talked about full equality as if it were a negative thing. See, these are the problems with maintaining ethnocracies, right? They lead to institutional inequalities in the name of preserving a kind of ethnic character at the expense of minority communities. We don't tolerate it in the United States. We don't tolerate it in Canada. We shouldn't tolerate it in the Middle East either, whether it's an Arab or a Jewish state.
Actually, there are many countries in Europe that have crosses on their flags and which have robust liberal democracies in Europe that have Christian religious symbols on their flags and that have preferential immigration policies. Let me finish, then you can speak. Then they have preferential immigration policies for members of a particular ethnic group based on a particular history. And there are many, many countries in the Muslim world that have those as well. And so I do find it odd that this principle seems to be only offensive to people when it comes to the one Jewish state in the world.
Because the Palestinians are indigenous populations of the land who are displaced
so are Jews.
By a modern colonial movement. There's a difference there.
So let me try to get a couple quick thoughts in here from our listeners at 410-319-8888. And listeners, we don't have a lot of time in this segment, so I'm going to ask you to keep to the point so I can get you earlier, but I really want to lay this out. We will come back to this discussion for a longer period of time as well, because I think it's a very critical discussion to have. Ernest, you're on the air very quickly.
Yeah, good evening.
Hi, Ernest.
Good morning, whatever. It's been reported that the Israeli government is giving Deborah Pavera to the Ethiopian Jews practicing racism against them. Also, the Africans that's coming to Israel from Ethiopia, Sudan, and those countries that have these wars over there, they're getting ready to build a prison to put those people in it. And they also practicing racism against the, I think it's called Mizrahim, these black African Jews. They're practicing racism against that.
Well, they're Jews from Asian Africa. They're not all black Jews, but go ahead. Right.
But they call them Mizrahim, and they are black. I'm talking about the Yemeni Jews. They are black people, African people. Now,
Arabian people.
But let me say this. That these Khazars that's over there, they have no right to that land. These people converted to Judaism. They are Khazars. There's a lot of records on it.
All right, Ernest, wait, let me go down to Manny for a quick thought, a very quick thought, Manny, and then we're going to go back to our guest for closing thoughts.
Yes, out of Ernest's mouth, we understand
Hi,
the
Michael.
Truth. And so far as there's no such thing as racism on the part of any Jew who is keeping his religion, the fact that he could even mention the Khazars, that there were people who converted, speaks volumes, because it means that anybody could become a Jewish person, and that would mean there's no racism. All he has to do is convert according to Jewish law. And secondly, as far as the territories are concerned, so-called, there's no such thing as settlers there. All these are people who returned there. Those territories of Yehuda and Shomron were bought, and it's in the Bible, by Abraham, our forefather.
Right, Manny, thank you so much. Peter, I appreciate the call. But Peter, therein lies the issue, partially.
Yes. Well, on the second point, it may be true that you can find reference, Manny, in Bereshit to the idea of Avram buying the Cave of the Machpelah. You can also find in Navi that Shlomo Melech, King Solomon, sold towns in the Galilee and traded land just to get the timber for the Beit HaMikdash, for the temple. So there is precedent in Jewish law for the idea of giving land away in return for peace as well. I think that the first point about Israel's discrimination Clearly, and I think Israel's asylum policies are very, very inadequate for the people who are fleeing wars in Sudan and Eritrea who have come to Israel. But when one talks about Israel as a fundamentally racist state, it's also very important that Israel did something very, very unusual amongst countries, which is it sent airplanes to pick up the Jews of Ethiopia, who are one of the poorest and most reviled communities on earth, and bring the Jews of Ethiopia to live in Israel. And that's a big part of the reason that I believe in the importance of the idea of a Jewish state, because I believe that when there are Jewish populations imperiled around the world, given the history of the Jewish experience over the last 1,000 years and the last 100 years, I want there to be a state that feels a special obligation to Jewish safety and self-protection, as Israel did when it saved the Jews of Ethiopia. And I would expect that a Palestinian state would have exactly that same sense of responsibility and obligation to Palestinians around the world.
And Stephen, closing out, your final thought?
I would never want a Palestinian state that practices institutional discrimination. I would never want a Palestinian state that has a legal system that in any way resembles Israel. That's anathema to my entire sense of politics, and that's anathema to the sense of politics of anybody who's committed to true democracy. As to the first caller, I would say that, yes, there's more than discrimination going on. There's institutional state-supported violence against African migrants and Ethiopians and against Arab Jews. This is what happens when you have ethnocracy. If you listen to the discourses that have been made about the terrible violence that's been inflicted on black people in Israel in recent months, politicians are talking about that violence as a way of preserving Jewish democracy. So I really want listeners to understand the problems inherent to the idea of limiting a democracy to a particular ethnic community. It always leads to violence against the minority, either implicitly or explicitly.
This discussion, I think, is kind of critical to have. It's just going to grow on the campuses that around this country and in this country. I want to thank the two of you, Stephen Soleta, for joining us, Associate Professor of English at Virginia Tech. We'll be, of course, linking to his writings and books on our website, steinershow.org. Peter Beiner as well, Associate Professor of Journalism and Political Science at City University of New York, and Schwartz Senior Fellow at the New America Foundation. We'll be linking to his books, The Crisis of Zionism and the others, on our site as well, so you can read his writings, and invite you both to return and look forward to a continuing conversation.
Thank you.
My pleasure.
Thank you both so much.
Thank you.
We're going to take a brief break, and when we return from this break at the top of the hour, we are going to jump into another look at national news with different set of guests, different set of issues, and we are going to break with Free Your Mind in Vogue. It is Maxine Jones' birthday.